Stupidity is presented by ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Welcome to a journey inside the soul of one of sports media's brightest minds. A profoundly nuanced odyssey called Stupidity. Hosted by the incomparable Stu Gotts, a man I consider a personal hero and icon of the industry. I want to make no bones about it. There is no Mike Greenberg today without the sensational Stu Gotts providing me the inspiration to chase my dream and challenge myself to be just half as brilliant as he is. Allow me, Mike Greenberg, a man who would probably today be doing traffic in Sioux Falls without Stu Gotts' influence, to welcome you to a truly transcendent sonic experience. This is Stupidity.
Welcome into another episode of Stupidity, the biggest podcast in the world, thanks to you. Please subscribe, rate, and review, unsubscribe, resubscribe, re-rate, re-review. We are the biggest thing on the planet. I haven't looked at the rankings on iTunes, but I know we're bigger than everyone, Stancy. I mean, I don't know what we're doing.
Do you assume that we're just number one all the time?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. Shouldn't I? I mean, yeah, I mean, we're number one. That's it.
You're in your late 40s, so I assume it's difficult for you to even check the rankings.
Yeah.
I think it's safer for all of us if just in your mind we're always number one.
I think it is safe. Yeah. Do not burst this bubble, okay? Yeah. Right? That is my mind, all right? Okay. Don't burst the bubble because, listen, we had a two-week run where we were bigger than Oprah, and I haven't checked it since, so I just imagine that we're still bigger than Oprah, and if we're bigger than Oprah, we're bigger than everyone. You know what I'm saying?
I hear that.
All right. Well, we got Jeff Perlman coming on. He's a writer. You have an unhealthy obsession with Jeff Perlman. It's weird. You haven't stopped emailing me about Perlman in 2 weeks, dude.
Yeah, he seems like a very intriguing guy. I don't know what to tell you.
All right. Well, listen, he has 6 New York Times bestsellers, and he's going to join us in a few minutes. You have questions. He has a new book out, 3-Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the crazy years of the Laker dynasty. You're obviously – being the NBA fan that you are, you're very interested in that, right?
Yeah, huge Kobe fan. So, of course.
Are you a Shaq fan?
I wouldn't say I'm an anti-Shaq guy, but I was never like a huge fan of Shaq. Like during their three-peat, I wasn't like a huge Laker guy. I mean, I'm a Knicks fan like you. So
right.
Back in 2000, the Knicks were still, you know, a year off of being in the NBA Finals in 99. So I would say I got into Kobe once Shaq left.
Where are you on Phil?
Love him. I mean, former Knicks.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're a Knicks fan. He came there and did nothing but waste our time and take our money. Well, not our money, but Dolan's money.
Here's the thing with Phil. Like, the only reason he came to the Knicks in that president role is because James Dolan just flaunted so much money in his face.
Right.
Anyone's taking that money.
Right.
So the fact that he wasn't, like, entirely successful, I can get past. Phil is still one of the greatest coaches of all time, and he was a player on the Knicks. And he won 2 titles. He was hurt for one of those titles. And, you know, he was a 6-man type anyway. But, yeah, I think Phil's fascinating. I've read a few of his books. I've read more Phil Jackson books than I've read Jeff Perlman books. And you think I'm obsessed with Jeff Perlman.
Well, I mean, I think you see some similarities with you and Jeff Perlman. I think he's a big runner. You're a big runner. Mm-hmm. He's into trivia games. You're into trivia games.
He's into trivia games? I didn't get that in the research.
He likes Hall & Oates. You love Hall & Oates. I mean,
did you see? We didn't ask him about this. Did you see who his favorite 5 athletes are? I thought you'd love this.
I know. I could. Well, listen, spoiler alert. I didn't have time to ask him. I wanted to because his last two were Wesley Walker.
I thought we were going to start with that.
When you're a Jet fan, that was the heyday, man. I mean, that's as good as it got for us. Was Ken O'Brien, who we took. We passed up Dan Marino for Ken O'Brien.
And it's one of Perlman's 5 favorite athletes of all time. What a tortured life, you Jets fans. I'm a Giants fan, and I'm mocking you. They're both terrible.
They're a combined 0-6 right now, the Jets.
Oh.
I think on Sunday what you had was the Jets getting blown out, the Giants getting blown out, the Yankees losing, the Mets losing, and I think the combined score of those 4 things was like 71-20. Like, it's crazy.
Painful.
I know.
I thought it was bad as a Giants fan. I'm watching that game, and I text my buddy, and I'm like, I think the number 1 pick is within reach. And he was like, nah, I don't think the Jets are going to win a game. We're probably top 5 now. And I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, the Jets are truly awful.
What? Or the Falcons. I mean, good luck.
Well,
The Falcons are actually trying to win games.
Yeah.
Killing me. So Jeff Perlman and a book about the Lakers leads me to the natural place of athletes that connote a body of water or gemstone. Wait a minute. Well, you know, a body of water in, you know, in honor of the Lakers, and a gemstone in honor of Jeff Perlman. Yeah, you see what I'm saying?
Okay.
I mean, we can play both games at once if you want. It'll be very confusing to both of us and the audience, but I'm happy to do it. And I will get it all started with Philip Rivers.
That's pretty good. Bruce Pearl.
Oh, gemstone.
I mean, Pearl is probably off anyway because we started with Perlman, but Bruce Pearl, I'm on the board.
All right. There has to be a diamond out there somewhere, right?
Neil.
Oh, there you go. I mean, coming to America. How about that? Hello, my friend. That's such a bad Neil diamond.
Keep going.
No, I'm not going to keep going. See, now I'm getting all mixed up. I told you it's getting very confusing.
Billy Ocean.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Is there a puddle out there? Is there a
reservoir?
Is there a
have?
Is there a sea out there? Is there a
green?
Hold on.
Well, there's like Kyle and Corey Seager, but I think that's kind of a stretch.
Right. I am looking for, hold on. Oh, did you know there's a Waddell C? Tommy Waddle.
That should not count.
Why not?
We love Waddle, though. We love Waddle.
How about Lake Victoria? Shane Victorino. That's a bad joke.
The Flying Hawaiian.
Of course you knew that. The Flying. Where are we? Doing bodies of water? Are we doing gemstones?
Is there a pond? There's got to be a pond out there.
There has to be a pond out there. By the way, for gemstones, how about Tiger Woods? Tiger's Eye. That's a gemstone. Did you know that?
This game is off the rails. Not that it wasn't off the rails already, but a Tiger's Eye is a gemstone?
It is, yep. How about a Nile Digs, the Nile River? How about that?
Kurt Flood?
Oh, that's pretty good.
Is that a body of water, or that's just like water in motion?
That's water in motion, I feel like. I don't feel like it's a body of water, right? How about Jason Bay?
Oh, there we go. That's well done by you, former Met.
Oh, we are back.
Yeah.
Great.
Wow.
What else you got here?
I got to go to gemstones here.
I'm still on bodies of water. This is
Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Oh, Amber.
Wow. Oh,
gemstone.
Wow. That's a gemstone?
Sure is.
Oh, wow. You are good at this game. How about the Caspian Sea? Dave Casper. It's so bad. It's such a stretch. It doesn't even make sense.
Take anything we can get here.
Right. Now I'm going back to gemstone. Let me see. Derek Rose. Rose Quartz.
What about Ruby? Is there a famous Ruby?
There has to be. Hold on. Let me look up famous Rubies.
All I got is Ruby Tuesdays, and that's not going to work.
No, hold on. Famous Rubies. Hold on.
Sapphire?
What do you want me to do with that?
I'm trying to help us.
Ruby Lynn, Ruby Walsh. Have you ever heard of any of these Rubies?
Nope.
Hold on. Most famous person named Ruby. Ruby Walsh.
Who is that?
The jockey, I think.
That can't count.
What?
Nobody knows who that is.
Okay, hold on. I'm looking up Rubies.
I'm looking up bodies of water. I'm back to that.
You're at bodies of water?
I am back there. Yeah, either one counts.
I knew this would be, I knew this game would be confusing.
A Brook. Dylan Brooks.
Oh, wow. Dylan Brooks. Okay. Well, I mean, the Brooks. Hold on. I'm looking for a Ruby. Just any athlete named Ruby. Just give me one goddamn athlete named Ruby.
What about a creek? Ray's Creek?
How about the Great Lakes? Work off of that. That should give you something.
Superior, Michigan.
I can't believe this area named after touchdown Tommy Waddell. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, any other bodies of water?
Lagoon?
Ooh, a lagoon.
A marsh? There's got to be a marsh. Andrew Marchand.
Oh, there you go. I mean, Andrew Marchand.
He gets a shout out every episode.
I mean, he is the guy. Listen, when my good friend Mike Greenberg took an hour of our radio show and made it his, I learned about it from Andrew Marchand. I mean, I can't think of any more bodies of water or gemstones. Steve Stone. Is there a diamond? There has to be a diamond.
We did Neil Diamond already.
Oh, you did. Hello, my friend. Hello. On the boat and on the plains. Sing it, Stanzik. They're coming to America. Bow, bow, bow.
Jeff Perlman, next.
Stupidity. Stanzik, I want to ask you a question before I ask Jeff anything. Why do you have this unhealthy obsession with Jeff Perlman? You have not stopped talking about him.
Yeah, it's getting awkward.
It's weird, Stanzik.
It's weird that you say that. This obsession started, I want to say, last Wednesday when you told me we were having him on. And I started doing research on him. Jeff, your work, I'm told, is phenomenal. I've read zero of your books for someone that's obsessed with you. I don't necessarily understand it, but your info did intrigue me. You're a runner. I'm a runner. You've written about various topics that are interesting that we'll get to. Your wife seems like she's way more cool than you are. And that's about it.
I think all those things are correct. And I'm a, sadly, I'm a former runner because my back is so bad. It's even worse. I'm a Pelotoner.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. That's terrible. Don't admit that.
I had to quit my gym. You know, I had no gym to go to.
Wow.
How many New York Times bestsellers do you have?
I have six.
Six? I thought it was nine.
I have 9 books. It's a misleading phrasing that publishers use. They'll be like, he is the New York Times bestselling author of 9 books. He's the New York Times bestselling author of 9. I've written 9, but only 6 of that first 8 were bestsellers.
I got to be honest, Jeff, that's total bullshit. And I took that right from your own website, which is like jeffperlman.com. Yeah, so clean it up.
Are you getting, because Perlman's controlling the message on his own website. You're right.
That's a good point.
That's 6-9, tomato, tomato, doesn't really matter. Listen, if you have 6, I am only 2 away from catching up to Jeff Perlman, New York Times bestsellers. Yes, I have 4, by the way, 4 of them.
Wait, Jeff, which ones weren't? Which were the shitty topics you picked?
The Bonds and Clemens.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeff, am I understanding this correctly that you did 28 interviews on Tuesday alone?
I might have. I'm up to.
I mean, Perlman, that sounds like hell. It really does.
It is. It beat on me a little bit.
What's worse, Jeff, writing the book or promoting the book?
I'm promoting the book because I love writing it. Like, I do this because I love writing. I mean, there are parts of it that are really cool promoting a book. There are. And it's all, I know this sounds corny, but I swear to God, it's true. Like, to me, if you're an author and someone, I don't care how many listeners a person has, if they want to take the time to talk to you about your book, you owe it to them to talk about the book. So you do it and you do your best. You know, I don't know. It's stupid, but true.
But Dan always tells me that writing, it's very lonely. When he used to write, he would go into a very deep, dark place. And he found it to be terribly lonely and very challenging. And I'm certain you've had the same experiences, right?
I would say I'm an extrovert, and this is the wrong business for an extrovert. Like, it's a wrong thing to do for an extrovert. It is. It's the reason I always write in coffee shops. And one of the reasons among a million this pandemic has sucked so bad is because I'm used to at least having the illusion of social interaction, of talking with a barista and going to places where they know you and all that stuff. And like, I'm not comfortable being a guy who just doesn't talk to anyone and puts his head down. If you're an introvert and you like writing, it's a great job for you.
Right.
It takes some adjustment emotionally to be an extrovert and do this. It really does.
We'll get to the new book that's out, Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, and Phil, that dynasty, the crazy years of the Lakers dynasty. Jeff Perlman with us here on Stupidity. I'm wondering, though, during this tour.
Is it a tour?
Well, whatever the f*** it is you're doing, it sounds like hell. During this hell, what is the worst question that has been asked of Jeff Perlman?
Actually, I haven't had any. It's always understandable. Like, the questions are always understandable. The worst question is because I hear it 1,000 times, which is, so why'd you write the book, right? So why'd you write the book? But it's a completely and totally reasonable question to ask. Like, it makes sense.
Right.
I just don't have a new way to answer it. You know, it's always the same answer. So. Right. Well, I will say one thing I really have been kind of impressed by. I did a podcast the other day from a student at Walla Walla University. He's just a journalist from Walla Walla University.
Right.
And he was amazing. And like, some of these college kids are just, I know it sounds, they're so original and they haven't been trained to ask these questions. That he was just great. So, you know, there have been some that have been really inspiring.
Stanzik, I dare you to ask him why he wrote the book. I dare you. Go ahead. don't ask.
Jeff, you've covered a lot of it. Not going to do it.
So was that the most fun you had on the tour? Was it that interview with the college kid? Was it Levitard? Was it like, what was the most fun you had on the tour?
I enjoy doing Rome. I enjoy doing Levitard. I like doing Coward. I love doing the kid from Walla Walla. As dumb as that sounds, he's just really good.
It feels like Walla Walla. Like you needed that. Like you needed a hole in your head, to be honest.
Yeah, but it's a big winner here. Walla Walla is a big winner.
Clearly.
I feel like the one thing that I don't have that I really like is like my parents don't care about sports at all, 0%. And when you write a book, one of the cool things is going back to the local bookstore. Like I always try to do an event at the local bookstore in my hometown of Mayo Pack. Right. And I don't have that. I don't get that experience this time. And it's, I don't know, it's stupid, but it means something for your parents to have this moment where their kid is blah, blah, blah on stage. And so it's doing it from home is overall a little disappointing.
If your parents hate sports, do they read your books or don't like sports? Do they even read them?
My dad does. My mom does not.
At least she's on it.
Have you quizzed your dad to actually make sure he read them, or is he just telling you, hey, Jeff?
Yeah. My dad's very good. I actually, one thing I like to do with him every now and then, maybe five times in my career, he's come to an event. Like I did an event where I was hired to be the MC, which is super weird, but it was a Mookie Wilson, Ron Darling event. So it was 86 Met event. And they said, you could bring someone. So I brought my dad. And my great joy is introducing my dad to Mookie Wilson and saying, just so you know, Mookie, my dad is a huge fan, huge Met fan. So ask him anything you want. And I did that with my mom once at the Tim McCarver show, and Tim McCarver just never showed. I was like, Tim, this is my mom. She's a huge fan, big Cardinals fan back in the day. This is a joy for me to do that.
Wait, so how does one become such a big sports fan growing up in a household where no one is a sports fan?
I think the main thing was I grew up in this tiny town in New York. We subscribed to the New York Times. Every section would be taken except the sports section. And I loved quickly the sports section, like love the sports section, the pictures. And even though the New York Times back then was just black and white, and it was the only section in my house you were allowed to bring in the bathroom. You couldn't bring any other section in the bathroom. My mom was very adamant. The only section we can bring in the bathroom is the sports section. So I would go into the bathroom.
The sports section was the only section worthy of bringing to the toilet with you?
Because nobody else read it. So there was no contamination issues. There was no,
I love that.
So I was allowed to read the sports section every day. I'd be sitting in the bathroom in Mayo Pack, New York, reading my sports section. And that really built a love for sports.
Jeff, I'm not going to ask you why you wrote the book. I'm going to ask you how you go about choosing your topics or the things you want to write about. Because you always choose the most interesting times, most interesting teams, individuals in sports. What's the process? How do you go through figuring out what you want to write about next?
So I basically have three things I always kind of consider and I always think about. Number one is it a subject that would hold my interest for 2 years? Like the Roger Clemens book is probably my biggest mistake as an author, as a writer, whatever you want to say, because I didn't enjoy it. Like it sucked. It wasn't fun. It took a lot out of me. I didn't enjoy it. Number two, hasn't been done and hasn't been done well. And that there have been Kobe books. There have been Shaq books. Shaq wrote a bunch of books. Kobe wrote The Mamba Mentality. But I didn't feel like there was really a great book about this era, just this 96 to 04 run. You know, I just didn't see it out there. And then number three is, does it have a chance of selling? You know, like I've yet to write the book about, and there's nothing wrong with them, but about being a boy and the kid I played Little League baseball with who, you know, went on to discover something, you know, or like the romantic story of this small town and so-and-so. Like, I don't feel like I can afford to write those books because this is my only job. And I also think these books have just as much fun, color, warmth, reporting as those do. So I'm very happy doing it.
Jeff, is there anything happening in sports right now, or do you ever watch sports in the moment and say, that's a topic for a book? Like, is that process that quick, or do you have to be looking back years?
I tend to be pretty nostalgic, but every now and then, like, if I were a publishing company right now, I would 1,000,000% find the best writer in the bubble and be like, well, I want a book. We're going to turn around pretty quick. I want it to be a book, Life in the Bubble, about that 1 year in the bubble. I think it's a great book. I just think it's an amazing story. I think a LeBron biography one day will be outstanding. I think his career is fascinating. The thing that's tough that I talk about a lot with my wife and different is like there's a difference between great players and icons and why icons make great subjects for books and great players may not. Like I would say like Brett Favre probably won't go down as a better quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. In the history of the NFL, I think Rodgers will be generally go down. But Favre is iconic. Favre, like, moved people. Favre touched people. And those subjects are the ones that make great books. I'm not sure an Aaron Rodgers book sells that many copies or draws that interest. Right. Yeah. So I am always searching for, like my next book that I start working on is a biography of Bo Jackson. Like, everything about Bo Jackson intrigues me. Everything about him intrigues me. And there's something iconic about this ghost who came and went. And he, so I'm always, like, I think LeBron meets those categories. I don't think Carmelo Anthony or Dwayne Wade probably does. It's
different, you know? Right. So like with the Bo Jackson, when do you decide that you're going to write about Bo? And then when do you actually go ahead and put that in motion?
As soon as I finished the Laker book, and as soon as the Laker book was going through edits, I started thinking, okay, what am I going to do next? And I talked to my editor, my agent, about a Bo Jackson idea. And he was like, I don't know. I was like, I'm telling you, this is a freaking, for my age, like, Bo Jackson was it. And my wall, Bo Jackson was it.
Yeah.
I just really believed in it. So I came up with a proposal and pitched it and got a book deal. And immediately, I mean, I've interviewed about 250 people for Bo Jackson already. I'm all about all his clips. I'm all about tracking down Bessemer, Alabama, and Auburn. I just love the journey. So you ask, like, do I like promoting or write? Like, I love going to Bessemer, Alabama, and learning everything I can, going to the small town library and digging through it. You know, everything I can learn. Like, that's my real joy of it all.
Right. Being in it, doing it. Yeah. Jeff Perlman with us, author of 6 New York Times bestsellers. Not 9, 6, but he has written 9 books. 6 of them have been New York Times
bestsellers. Failed again.
His newest book, 3-Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Laker Dynasty, is available wherever books are sold. Jeff, I'm wondering, with this particular topic, with this book, how did a team that was so talented on the outside become such a mess on the inside?
I mean, the good news is they were a mess enough to win 3 straight titles, so it wasn't ruinous.
Right.
I mean, I just honestly, I think it's kind of a basic story with a really complicated innards, which is, you know, Kobe shows up out of high school and he's convinced he's going to be Jordan right off the bat. He shows up for his first team meeting and he says to the rest of the players, nobody here, my name's Kobe Bryant, nobody here's going to punk me. Like, that was his introduction to the Lakers. And you have this mega world superstar who just wants to be like Batman to your Robin. Like, that's all he wants. He just wants to be Batman. He wants you to give him the proper respect and deference, and he won't even care if at the end of the season you average more than him. He just wants to be known as the guy in the middle, the big guy, the Shaq dude. He just wants that, and he wants you to come to him. And his favorite guys were the guys he was buying suits for. He was taking out for dinner. He was flying in their parents for the first game. Like, he loved the Mark Madsens and the Kareem Rushes and the Mike Penberthys and, like, guys who just wanted his appreciation, you know, like. And Kobe didn't want that. He never wanted that. He had no interest in that. He didn't have a need for it. You know, he was self-driven, self-motivated. I'm going to be the best. If I have to carve someone up, I'm going to do it. I don't care. And it really led to this weird, eternal relationship of kind of awkwardness and passive. You know, like, in the Laker locker room, they'd be 15 feet apart. The media is around Shaq. Shaq says, somebody here needs to pass more. You know, they all go over to Kobe. Shaq says, somebody here needs to pass more. Yeah, well, you tell him if he gets his fat ass and down low, blah, blah, blah. Back to Shaq. It was the most passive aggressive, kind of weak, through the journalism, you know, spear back and forth ever. But so they were passive aggressive and really talented and both had huge egos, you know?
Jeff, it seems like Kobe is the one you've selected as the most interesting of the 3, Phil, Shaq, and Kobe. But from where I'm sitting, I think it's Phil. Is he just too difficult to understand what's going on with his thought process? What was it like covering him and incorporating him in the whole story?
No, I think he's fascinating. I really do. I got lucky in regards to reporting this with him. So I reached out to Jeannie Buss early on, who used to date Phil. And I said, I'm really having trouble getting in touch with Phil. And she said, well, let me email him for you. And a few minutes later, she wrote me back and she said, all right, you can email him and set up a time. And I thought, he initially made it clear he wanted to do it over the phone. And I said, can I come out to Montana? So I flew out to Montana and he said, he sees me and I'm like, hey, thanks so much. And he's like, I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for Jeannie. That was his first thing. Right. I thought, crap. We ended up spending 8 hours together, like driving all over Montana, going back to his house, having dinner. He was fantastic, right? Just fantastic. And I really think the thing that I found interesting about him, like when you say he's interesting, there's one thing that I still don't think I fully punctured, which is he has so many interests and he's seen so much in the world. And he'd been around so many people. Why would he want to deal with this shit? Like, why would he want to deal with this nonsense? Like, Shaq and Kobe aren't getting along and I have to work on that, blah, blah, blah. And we need to get together and like, can, like, why do you still care? You're like, why do you still care? And I honestly think his answer was two things. Number one, basketball is my love. And I didn't really have that much else to do. Like, he took a year after coaching Chicago. He retired. He lived in Woodstock. He lived in Montana. He got a divorce from his wife. And he was bored out of his mind. So I actually think, like, he just saw this all as an opportunity to take these practices I've worked on outside of basketball and apply them to players. And his toughest player ever, I think he would agree, is Kobe Bryant. Was very resistant to buying in and very resistant to being a part of a system and very resistant to surrendering the idea of being the alpha. Like, he had to be the alpha. And there was this thing that came with that era of ball player, whether it was Iverson or Marbury or Kobe, you got to be the alpha dog. And he had trouble not being.
Yeah, one thing Phil's famous for is recommending books for his players on road trips. So, Jeff, in a weird game where Stugatz is actually going to read the book, what book would you recommend for him?
Of my books or any book?
Any book.
Oh, man. I mean, I'll tell you the greatest basketball book ever, but I don't think that's the
greatest. Don't say basketball Simmons book because it's not, all right?
No, I was going to say David Halberstam, Breaks of the Game. And the best sports book ever is A Fall Spring by Pat Jordan. But I don't know. You can't go wrong with those two. I don't have a great answer. I wish I had a great funny answer.
Stanzik wanted like Dr. Seuss or something like that. Like, he wanted something stupid there.
A friend of mine, Radio for Dummies. A friend once brought me a book and it's called
I wrote that book.
Living Life with a Large Penis.
Yeah.
I thought it was awesome. So
yeah.
You can borrow that when I'm done with it.
Yeah. Right, because I mean, Lord knows I have no idea what it's like to live with a large penis. I mean, so are you fasting, by the way, during this tour? Are you fast? Yom Kippur, holiest day of the Jewish calendar? Yes. Neither of us should be doing this, by the way. We should not be doing
it. Parents gave me permission because I'm not leaving the house.
I want to ask you quickly. I'm just going to run through these books. I know you got to get out of here, but I want to run through some of your books because you picked some of the most fascinating topics, and I just want to get the best story from each of the books, okay?
All nine of them were bestsellers. I don't know if you heard.
Well, six of the nine. 86 Mets, Bad Guys Won. Best story, 86 Mets. Go ahead, Jeff.
I mean, they fly back from Houston after winning the NLCS, and they absolutely destroy the airplane, like destroy it. There's, you know, the seats are ripped apart, and they allow the wives to fly with them on that flight, and they never did that. And the wives were just like getting wasted and vomiting everywhere. So they destroy this plane. It's a charter plane. They destroy the plane. Frank Cashin, the general manager, pulls aside Davey Johnson, the manager, and says, "You got to tell your guys, you got to pay for this. This is hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage." So Davey Johnson walks up before the team and he says, "Guys, I just talked to Frank Cashin and you got to pay for that. I mean, he's really upset. He's really upset." And then he goes, "But you know what?" And he takes the letter from Frank Cashin, rips it in half and goes, "Them, you guys are about to win us the World Series and they're going to make so much money off of that. So to hell with them, blah, blah, blah." And the team just storms out. Great moment. Great moment.
That's one of the great moments of your life, by the way, that whole 86 year, right?
Yeah.
Because I think we root for similar teams. We don't really have much to be happy about. So
yeah.
That was one of them. Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty is available wherever you get your books. Jeff Perlman on with us right now. Gunslinger, Brett Favre, best story.
Oh, well, so Favre goes hunting. I got this with his hunting buddy. They used to go hunting in the Up, which is in Michigan, Upper Peninsula. And there used to be, during hunting season, all these hunting lodges were turned into kind of quasi-bar strip clubs. And they'd get these young women and they'd strip in the bar and blah, blah, blah. Well, Favre shows up to hunt one day with a bunch of his friends and all these people immediately flock him for autographs. And Favre's buddy, this is when Favre's a young player. Favre's buddy's like, "You can't just sign. You got to charge them off $50 an autograph. Well, the people still line up and they're paying $50 an autograph for Brett Favre's autograph. And he has this big wad of money and his friends are like, psyched that they got all this money. And Brett Favre takes a roll of money and throws it to the strippers. It's like, "All right, see you later." And walks out. It's so Favre. It's like the most Favre thing ever.
I love that. All right, boys will be boys. The 90s Cowboys. The best story. The 90s Cowboys. That had to be a blast to write.
I'll tell you one that was funny is there's a defensive back named Scott Case.
Right.
He played most of his career at the Falcons. He was at the Cowboys this year. And one day he said to me, "Has anyone told you about Charles Haley and Charles Haley's penis?" And I'm like, "No." He's like, "Oh, I'm going to tell you a story." They were sitting in a meeting one day in a staggered classroom. So they're desk behind desk behind desk. And one day, Scott Case, he's sitting there new to the team, and he hears Charles Haley going, "Yo, Scott, turn around." And Jimmy Johnson's talking. And Scott's like, "No, I can't turn around. Shut up, Charles." "Scott, turn around. I got to show you something." "Charles, shut up. I can't turn around." "Scott, will you just f-ing turn around? I got to show you something." Scott Case turns around, and it's Charles Haley with his elongated penis just stretched across the desk.
Charles Haley, a guy who knows what it's like to live like, live with a large penis. Yeah.
The three of us should talk about it.
Brought it full circle. Walter Payton, sweetness, best story. My favorite athlete of all time, by the way, Walter Payton.
Yeah, one of my two.
Amazing.
I'll tell you how he got his nickname, which I like. His nickname, obviously, was Sweetness. And he was playing in back in the day, the NFL used to have, and this is crazy, a college defending Super Bowl champion all-star game. So he'd take all the college all-stars, bring them to Northwestern University in Chicago, coincidentally, and they would play the Super Bowl champions. So this year they're playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. And this week they're playing the Steelers. And in the lead-up, it's all the best college players in the country. And they've never heard of Walter Payton. It's Jackson State. And one day he's running with the ball, and a defender is about to tackle him. And he puts some move on him, runs past him, and while he's running past him says, in his real high-pitched voice, he goes, "Your sweetness is your weakness," and just run past him. And that's when everyone started calling him Sweetness.
God, I love that. I love that. Jeff Perlman, his new book, Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Laker Dynasty, is available wherever books are sold right now. Before Stancic has a quick question, don't take this the wrong way about your wife. I have a question about a ghostwriter, and we'll ask those in a second. But I'm wondering, Kobe and Shaq, which side was the locker room on predominantly? Was it Kobe's side? Was it Shaq's side?
It was Shaq in a major way.
Really?
He had his enemies and he had his moments, but he was just ridiculously giving. Like, he just was a really giving guy. And he was a guy I wrote about. I mean, I read, like, Mark Madsen shows up out of Stanford. He's a Mormon. He's very devout. And Shaq just, he's sitting next to him on the plane. And whenever a flight attendant walks by, a new flight attendant, Shaq will be like, "Hey, you Mormon by any chance?" Like, there was a day Mark Madsen shows up at the Staples Center. And a woman's like, who we didn't know, is like, "Are you Mark Madsen?" She's like, "Yes." She goes, "I was at a club last night and Shaq was there and he was asking all of me and my friends if we were Mormon. Is that not weird? Because he wanted to set you up." Like, that was just him, you know? Like,
right.
He had flaws, but he was really giving and really decent and really embraceable. And I just, Kobe during that era, he didn't want any of that.
Was Kobe and Shaq, was it always passive aggressive, or was there actual altercations, like face to face?
There was one really good fight during the lockout at, I think it was LA Southwest College, and Olden Polonese was there. He was playing in this pickup game, and he told me all about it.
What a great name, by the way. Wow. I mean, he just drops that out of the sky, Virginia Center.
Love claim to fame, being traded for Scottie Pippen, which did not work out well for one of those teams. No, Polonese was great, and he was at the fight, and I met Polonese at a Starbucks, and he just gave me this blow-by-blow. They're playing pickup, and Kobe's on one team, and Shaq's on the other. And Shaq is annoying to play against because he always calls fouls. And at one point, Kobe starts talking trash, and Shaq is basically like, "Say one more thing." He's like, "Ugh," and he just reaches back and pop. And Kobe's charging at him. And Olden Polonese has an arm around Kobe. And Shaq's like, "I can get your ass traded tomorrow," and this whole thing. And so every now and then there were good brawls in between the passive aggressiveness.
Is it fair to say, would you say it's fair to say that the two, I believe this to be true. I think Kobe has lent his voice to this, that the two championships Kobe won without Shaq meant more to him than the three he won with Shaq.
Yes. And I would not say the same for Shaq in Miami. I just don't think Shaq probably feels that way. But I would say it was incredible vindication for Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, because I think Shaq with Wade felt like the number two. Kobe felt like the number two to Shaq when they won their three. And then Kobe won those fourth and fifth titles as being the alpha. He was the guy there, right?
It also helps that Shaq did the how's my ass taste right now, which is the best thing ever. So that didn't hurt.
Jeff, and how do you guard against this? Because you know it's going to come up. It probably has already come up. The fact that you're releasing the book during a year, and I know we discussed this with you on the Levitard show, but I want you to get this out there because I think it's important, Jeff, because people will criticize you for it, and perhaps they already have, that you're releasing the book, you know, in a year in which, you know, Kobe recently has passed away.
I always say, I mean, number one, I actually understand the criticism. Like, I actually understand the criticism. You could certainly, the book, it's 8-9 months after Kobe Bryant died, or 8-9. You could certainly make the argument, well, why didn't you put it out next year? Or why didn't you put it out 2 years? We need more time. I just thought that was a fair amount of time to sort of take a deep breath. The book was done before he died. I thought a lot about what to do with the book. I ended up writing a new author's sort of an intro to the book because I do think it's an important point. Like, this is a period of time in his life. It's not Kobe Bryant at 41 with the daughters and his wife, and it's just a different guy. And this is a period of development in his life. And if you are, if you're someone who reads this book and walks away from it thinking, God, the Kobe Bryant who died is a real asshole, then I didn't do a very good job explaining what the book is about, because it's not what it is.
All right. Well, Jeff, you guys left me for the awkward transition to now talking about your wife.
You did more research on his wife than you did on his books.
You should read his website. Half the website's about his wife. A link to the wife's website. Your wife has her PhD. She's a family coach.
Yeah.
I'm newly married, and I'm just curious what it's like to argue with your wife, because I assume you never win, because no man ever wins. And I have a friend who's married to a therapist, and he tells me, he goes, I argue with my wife all the time. I never win, but at least I feel good about myself afterwards. So I'm wondering, Jeff Perlman, what is it like for you arguing with your wife who has her PhD and is a family coach?
It's not very successful. I mean, it's pretty bad. Here's the thing. My wife is, her name's Catherine. She's the best. Last year, she donated a kidney to a stranger. Like, she's just a really decent human being. Like, a truly, she literally saw a flyer in a Starbucks of someone who needed a kidney, and months later was donating her kidney to this person. She's as good and decent a person. So, like, we just got a dog a few days ago, and I was arguing about what we should name the dog. And then I was like, you know what? I feel like she kind of earned this one, so I'm just going to give it to her. Maybe that's me losing another fight. I don't know. I don't know. I
would like, if it's okay with you, I think we should have your wife on the podcast someday, and maybe Stanzik has a few questions about marriage, and maybe she can help him out. Is that, would
she'd
that
be great? Right?
Yes,
she'd be great. She's okay. Fantastic.
All right, good. Let's Stanzik book her.
You have no idea what she's walking into, though. I guess.
Jeff Perlman with us. We'll let him go in just a second. New book is out: Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, The Crazy Years of the Laker Dynasty. It's available right now, wherever books are sold. Go buy the book. Jeff, so I'm wondering, I'm writing a book. It's my personal record book. And I am wondering here, Stanzik is actually writing the book. I'm lending my name to it. How much should I pay a ghostwriter? Like, what's a good deal? What's a bad deal? How does this work in the book writing industry?
Are you paying flat rate, or are you paying percentage of advance you get?
I'm going to do whatever Jeff Perlman tells me to do. That's what I'm going to do.
Just give him all the money.
What do you mean, give him all the money?
Like you, Jeff.
You should probably go 50-50. If you want to be fair, you go 50-50. Every now and then you'll get an athlete and he'll be like, yeah, I want you. I haven't done a book with an athlete, but athletes will be like, I want you to do my book with me. How much are you going to pay me? I'll give you 20%. And you're like, you're going to talk to a tape recorder for 5 hours and I'm going to spend the next 5 months writing. I better get higher than 20%. So go 50-50. Be a fair person.
All right. So 50-50, you mean that? So there's a flat fee. I should give him all of that, right, for writing the book, and then 50% of sales, or what do you, like, what do we do?
I think you should just split every, no, I think.
Just split everything 50-50.
If you get a book advance, if you got an advance for the book, a book deal, he should get 50% of it. If you didn't get an advance, you should pay him a flat rate for writing it. Then if you get a book deal, you should give him a percentage of that as well.
Okay. So Stanzik, I don't know if you heard that the way I heard it, but 70-30 my way.
Yeah, basically that's it.
Okay. Talk to my agent, Jeff Perlman.
I'm here.
Jeff, good luck with the book. Again, it's the new book, Three Ring Circus, Kobe, Shaq, Phil, and the Crazy Years of the Lakers Dynasty. It's available wherever books are sold. Good luck with the book, man. We appreciate the time. We know it's a busy time for you, especially with no food in your stomach. So sorry about that.
Stupidity!
All right, Stanzik, you have developed, as I told the audience, an unhealthy obsession with Jeff Perlman over the last couple of weeks. Was that interview everything you dreamt it would be?
I mean, yeah.
If you had dreams about it, that's weird, by the way.
No, I really enjoyed Perlman. It's rare where I'm looking somebody up to provide questions. I'm like, wow, this guy sounds fascinating. For someone who I didn't really know, I knew his name vaguely 3 weeks ago, and now I feel like I know him intimately.
I'm surprised you haven't read any of his books, because you're a big reader and all these books are about, well, they're about sports and probably the most interesting teams and individuals to ever play sports. So I'm surprised you haven't read any of his books, man.
I don't read that many sports books, to be honest. It's one of those, like, yeah, you know, sometimes you need, reading's kind of like a break for me from sports.
That's fair. So you read about Jeopardy.
I did finish Trebek's book about a month ago. Fascinating.
Would you, so Perlman said, you asked him the question about his wife donating a kidney. She did donate.
He brought it up. I would have brought it up. Perlman brought it up on his own. His wife seems like a tremendous person. She donated a kidney to a stranger.
Yes, and get her on the show, as we discussed with Perlman. She wants, so would you ever donate a kidney to a stranger?
Absolutely not. I know you wouldn't either. Would you donate a kidney to a family member?
Depends which one.
Abby?
No.
Rachel?
Yeah.
Okay. Emma?
Debatable. I mean, Rachel's got a lacrosse career.
Figured she'd be an easy yes.
So just to recap, that is no on Abby. Wait, I can live with one kidney, right?
I'm pretty sure.
And so my wife needs the kidney?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You're putting me in a tough spot. Would you do that for your wife?
Of course.
I fucking hate you.
I'm newly married, though, so.
You are newly
married. It's an easier answer for me.
Right. I'm 20 years in. More than 20 years in. No. Stupidity.